Welcome back to the Roundtable. 12 minutes after 9 o'clock, it's a Friday edition. It's the final pre-fund drive edition of the Roundtable, and we get it started with our Roundtable panel. Joining us today, Legislative Director of the New York Public Interest Research Group, Blair Horner. Blair, your first time on the show, yeah?
I'm very excited.
Don't be nervous. You look a little tense.
Actually, after that mellow music, I'm feeling much more relaxed.
That's what Dave tries to do.
Very smooth.
Put the first-time guests at ease with a little mellow music. Also, Alan Shartok is here. He was out till the wee hours of the morning. He's the man about town. He's a bon vivant, and he was gallivanting last night. Alan, what were you doing up so late? Well, you see, he fell asleep.
Wait, yo, now, how about this?
I can hear you now.
This?
Yes.
Is that better?
Yes.
I thought you nodded off there for a moment. I had to get to my microphone.
Well, that helps on a radio show. Well done.
It's good, yes. So what I was going to say is that we went to the opening of the BIFF, the Berkshire International Film Festival.
Ooh.
It was fabulous, yeah, as always. Oh, yeah, you know, everybody was there. They have a stellar lineup of shows, of movies. The town of Great Barrington is bustling, and Kelly Vickery is, as always, a sorceress. Just terrific how she puts all of this together. You know, they looked at 700 films, including Karen Allen, who is one of the famous actress Karen Allen,
sure,
who's one of the judges, and they came up with 75, but 700 films. Can you imagine that? That's really dedication.
Did you see any films last night?
Yes, we saw a wonderful film last night, and while I can't give you the name,
aha,
I can tell you the beautiful, beautiful star. Was also the director, the star,
yeah,
and did much of the editing, and she wrote it. So that's all she did. But it was a beautiful film about somebody who returns to Amman, a woman who returns to Amman, Jordan, to get married, and then what unfolds without giving you the end of the story, as I did in The Crying Game.
So no spoiler alert necessary here. The name of the film, I believe, is May in the Summer.
Oh, that is what the name of the film is.
Yeah.
How did you know that?
Well, I know things. Actually, Sarah LaDuc gave me a piece of paper that said it, so if you must know.
And our wonderful Sarah, always on the job.
Indeed.
It was a beautiful film.
By the way, if you'd like to email the program, we'd love to hear from you. Roundtable@wamc.org is the email address. Roundtable@wamc.org. Alan, I got to tell you something. 305 is where we stand now in the lockbox.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
So we need 25 today, tomorrow, and the next day, and we get an additional $25,000 from the wonderful Mr. Big, who really is incentivizing us. We couldn't have done this without him. It's fantastic. And by the way, we've already got an email that says, "Dear Alan, for weeks I've been hearing that if I donate, 2 weeks later I would be married. And wouldn't you know it? I donated today, and in 2 weeks, I'm getting married."
Oh, that's amazing.
Thanks a bunch. If you could only get him to clean the house, do I need a bigger donation? Yes.
Well, you know, and so I got to tell you, now that this has actually happened, I'll hear this over and over again coming up. But the fund drive starts up on Monday, right?
Right. It starts up at Monday at 6 a.m., and there are people who stop me in the streets and say, you know, I gave a little to the lockbox. I'm saving some for the fund drive. That's great. And then there's some people who say, I don't want to give to the lockbox. I love the fund drive. I met a wonderful woman last night at the theater who said that to me. I love the fund drive. I don't want the fund drive to be shorter. So if you want the fund drive to be shorter, God bless you. Put it in now. Go to WAMC.org and just click on the lockbox. And just, as you say, Ray, feed the lockbox.
Feed the lockbox. We have about $20,000 to go to meet that challenge from Mr. Big. And the fund drive
begins.
That's
unbelievable. That is, I didn't think we were going to make it. Now I think we could well make this if everybody just does something. Everybody's listening right now. It's done in 5 minutes. You know, we make $100,000, Ray, in a morning sometime. No, in a day, mm-hmm, during the fund drive. And so that should be, we should be able to do it. And by the way, doing a little extra wouldn't hurt, would it?
No. And, you know, I've been accused by some, including yourself, of being a bit negative and cranky at times. But I would point out that $20,000 to go, it's not a slam dunk.
Right. That's right. It's not. Oh, by the way, it's not a slam dunk. We could lose it.
Yeah.
And And when you click on it and on the lockbox and write a message, say Alan sent me.
Fair enough.
He sounds desperate.
Don't be desperate, Alan. The email address here, if you want to join in the fun, it's roundtable@wamc.org. Blair Horner is with us today, and I thought we would start on the program with one that, Alan, you've been talking about quite a bit, and Blair has mentioned more than once. And this is, and I'll read this directly here from Jimmy Vielkind's piece and William Brunel. On eve of WFP Workers' Family Working Families Party convention, no obvious outcome. With the Working Families Party convention starting this weekend and no clear consensus on a nominee among committee members, it's possible the party will nominate a placeholder candidate for the New York gubernatorial race. And Alan, I heard your commentary at 7:37, and you say this is a key for Governor Cuomo, and I'm surprised he has such a huge lead. Does he really need it? You start out.
Well, let's let Blair, who really is an expert in this. Blair is much more positive, enthusiastic about the idea that something.
I feel like I'm being set up, Alan.
You are. Where we might have campaign financing in New York State as a result of this, and Blair will explain.
Thank you, and good morning to everyone. I don't know if you heard this earlier, Alan, but the smooth jazz music that sort of set up the piece here sort of mellowed me out. On this issue, everybody knows what the deal is on this. The Working Families Party is to the left of the Democratic Party in New York's political structure. They have to nominate a candidate for governor. They do that tomorrow. That's their convention. They're going to be in Albany. They're going to decide who the gubernatorial candidate is. New York, unlike most states, allows fusion voting, where you can be on a number of political party lines if you get nominated by more than one, and your vote count counts as the aggregate number of all of those put together. So one of the issues is the governor wants as many lines as possible. He's already taken the Independence Party line, the much maligned Independence Party. I think he certainly wants the Working Families Party line, and that would allow him then to run on three lines to his opponent, who apparently will run on only two.
But how many lines do you need?
The more the merrier, I think, is the goal.
But he has a commanding lead.
Yes, he has a big polling lead. Although the polling tells you, it's very interesting, that if a left of Cuomo candidate runs, it eats dramatically into the governor's margin, because there's a lot of dissatisfaction among liberals with the governor. The governor who's set himself up as a sort of fiscal conservative at the same time as a social liberal. And so he's running into problems, particularly with the teachers union and some of the other public employee unions. And the polling, the most recent polling, says the governor drops under 40% in terms of his margin.
Wow.
If he runs with a Working Families Party candidate that is actually running, as compared to the Jimmy Vielkind piece with his placeholder, and a Republican. So we've seen this before. Alan, you might remember this. Back in 1990, the conservatives ran their own candidate and almost beat the Republicans for second place. And that's potentially what could happen here.
Yes, and there are lots of things to say about this. For all you people in Massachusetts and Vermont and everywhere else who are looking on in this, we think you should be allowed to come to the zoo to watch the animals behave.
Nice.
But it really is fascinating. Now, there are a lot of things to be said here, but the big kahuna in all of this is this idea that if the governor is willing to guarantee and to get the Republicans in the Senate, which I think he's responsible for having. In other words, I think he's the guy who set up the fact that the Republicans would continue in power in the state Senate, even though they have fewer bodies than the Democrats do, by getting the four, some people call them traitors, some people just call them,
opportunists.
The Independent Democratic Conference came over. They all got, hefty committees and good things as a result of doing it. But there's a lot of fury about that going on. So all the governor has to do, I hope he's listening. I don't think he is, but if we have a station down in his hometown, all he has to do is to guarantee to go to the Republicans, Dean Skelos, the head of the Republicans in the Senate, and say, "Hey, Dean, you want to continue to be in the majority, or would you like a taste of being in the minority, sitting in the back with your head down and getting nothing? Which would you rather have?" And by the way, Dean, if you choose the latter, then what's going to happen is all your old guys who are in your conference are going to quit because they don't want to be in the minority. So you better do what I tell you. Now, the governor says, "I can't just go snap my fingers and have them do it." And I say, "Want to bet?" And the other thing is he can go to those four Democrats who came over to help the Republicans and say, "Get back over there where you belong." What, are they going to start messing around with a governor like Andrew Cuomo, who's been known not to take a prisoner or two?
We are joined today by Blair Horner from NYPIRG, also Alan Shartok. We'll take a short break and then back on this topic. And specifically, I'll ask our panelists about the makeup and clout of the Working Families Party. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Support for WAMC comes from Adams Fairacre Farms, Poughkeepsie, Kingston, Newburgh, and Wappinger. Trees, shrubs, blooming perennials, Adams-grown annuals and bedding plants, gardening supplies and advice, adamsfarms.com. Harbrook Fine Windows, Doors, and Hardware, since 1955, featuring windows and doors by Marvin for design and energy efficiency, serving Eastern New York, harbrook.com for showroom directions. And the Paul Green Rock Academy, Woodstock, New York, offering summer day and overnight camps with professional musicians. Who loves rock music? We do. rockacademy.com.
Welcome back to the Roundtable on this Friday morning. 9:23 is the time. It is our Roundtable panel. Alan Shartok is here, Blair Horner, and yours truly, Ray Graff. The email address is roundtable@wamc.org. Somebody wrote in to ask if our video is on, and I think our video is on. It's, according to Mr. Hopper in the control room,
Actually, we got two.
Okay.
We got one from our friend Tom.
Yes.
Who says, "How come it's not on?" And then we got another one from NS, who says, "Live video doesn't seem to be working."
All right. Well, I'll tell you what.
People want to see us.
I'm surprised that they do, but I will go during the news in 6 minutes and check it out and make sure we're up and running, by the way.
It could be the fact that I'm the guest today and somehow it's blown out the video.
You broke the camera?
It's entirely possible. So, I have a face for radio.
Well, actually, to be fair, from speaking on behalf of Ray and me, you have the best face of the group.
Oh, damning me with faint praise.
You're not speaking for me. All right, so back to the Working Families Party and Governor Cuomo. Now, New York, obviously a very blue state, but obviously the governor's conservative tact, at least economically, designed to perhaps pull in the upstate voters.
That's right.
So this being a blue state, it's not necessarily a vast majority who are far left, right? Or am I wrong?
Well, you're right, but New York is really a purple state outside of the city of New York. If you take the city of New York out of the voter enrollment polls, it's almost equal in the rest of the state. If the governor wants to win big, which he wants to do, he won with over 60% last time. His father, when his first ran for re-election, got about 65% of the vote in 1986. I think he wants to break through that. He can't do that if things are fractured. So he reaches to the middle with his lieutenant governor nominee, a pro-gun, has made some critical comments about immigrant policy, and bank lobbyist to be his running mate. That appeal is to the upstate voters to help run up the score. He doesn't want to get his base eaten away. And I think that's the concern with the Working Families Party. Yes, Alan.
You're exactly right. But something interesting is happening, Blair. Perhaps you could take us there, too. And that is Bill Samuels, who is the son of Howie the Horse Samuels, an obscure political figure in New York history. Bill Samuels, who's been looking for an issue for a long time and who sees himself as a progressive and is really for campaign financing, has announced, which is possible in New York, that he's going to run against not Cuomo, but this unknown lieutenant governor candidate. What do you make of that?
Well, I think that's a real threat. As you may recall, Alan, when his father ran in 1982, The designee of the party was H. Carl McCall, and a guy named Al Del Bello knocked him out in the primary. So it's entirely possible for, again, the people who particularly are not in New York State, the lieutenant governor primaries, you get to vote on whoever you want. This guy Samuels could be a formidable opponent, but he's also been saying he's going to take his cues from what the Working Families Party does tomorrow. I think that's the elephant in the room, or maybe the donkey, tomorrow.
Let's go back to that. We had, of course, the co-chair of the Working Families Party on WAMC, and she was playing it coy about whether or not, they would nominate Cuomo. Now she's been quoted in the Times as saying, basically, she doesn't see how that's going to happen, and they've come up with an even more obscure person to run on the gubernatorial ticket from the Fordham Law School. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, Zephyr Teachout, which is a great name.
That's her name, Zephyr Teachout.
For a gubernatorial candidate, I like the name.
I like that name even more than Sheldon E. Silver.
I don't know about that.
Sheldon L. Silver, whichever of the Sheldons we're talking about here. In terms of the Working Families Party itself is split, right? Because the muscle in the operation really comes from the unions. They are a multi-issue operation that has a lot of business before the governor. They probably want to play ball with the governor as much as possible. You have rank-and-file idealists within the Working Families Party, which want to create really a separate party, and they may not be able to resolve their own internal differences by tomorrow, and this may be their strategy on how to deal with that particular problem.
Couldn't this hurt the party? In other words, if they don't endorse Cuomo and he still wins big, which I were a betting man would say that that's going to happen, doesn't this hurt the party more than it hurts Cuomo?
Well, it could easily if the unions walk away for fear of retribution. I think Alan mentioned it before that the governor, we'll say that the governor, whatever you think of him, knows how to use power. He knows how to use the levers of power for sure.
Oh, my God. And, Machiavelli had nothing. Machiavelli had nothing on this guy.
All right.
And so the unions may walk, which may hurt them in the long run. Now, again, people joined the party because they believed that it was a separate thing. And the conservatives have done the same thing to the Republicans. When Alan was talking before about how the governor could snap his fingers and Dean Skelos would go into line, Dean Skelos has to worry about the Conservative Party. When Dean Skelos allowed for same-sex marriage vote, conservatives primaried Senate Republicans, and three of them lost. And that lesson hasn't been lost on the Senate Republican leadership.
That's Blair Horner.
But
we're running out of time here in this half hour,
sorry.
But we will take a break, and we'll pick it up again because you guys are on a roll. Blair Horner from NYPIRG is here, our own Alan Shartok. I'm Ray Graff. You can email us at roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. Let's take a break. Mr. Hopper for news. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. The time coming up on 9:37. It's our Roundtable panel. That is, Alan Shartok and Blair Horner are here. You can email us at roundtable@wamc, roundtable@wamc.org. And don't forget, this is the final push on our lockbox challenge. Have less than 20,000 to go to reach our goal, in which we will get a $25,000 additional challenge. A bonus, if you will, from Mr. Big, and that would be Monday morning at 6 a.m. We got to raise $20,000 before then.
A couple of things, if I can. Yes, first of all, there's nothing more important than keeping the engine going. And if everybody will just, what did you say, 20,000 away now?
A little less than that, yes.
Is that what it is?
Mm-hmm.
A little less than 20. In the 19,000 Zs, we could easily do it. We'll get another $25,000 from Mr. Big if we can do it. It'll be just great. By the way, we did hear from Larry, who said, Blair misstated the date that Howard Samuels was a candidate for governor. He did not run in 1982. In 1970, he lost narrowly in a primary to Arthur Goldberg. Woo! In 1974, he narrowly lost in a primary to Hugh Carey. It was Howard Samuels who chose a little-known attorney from Queens to be his lieutenant governor running May 74. His name was Mario Cuomo. I find the story about Bill Samuels and the Working Families Party to be very interesting. Please keep reporting on it. Thanks for the great program. And now that I have the floor and our
well, just let me
and,
just Alan, I hate to cut you off, but let me just mention what I said. H. Carl McCall ran in 1982, not Howard Samuels.
Ah, uh-huh. Oh, no.
Back to Larry.
Right. So you did.
All right.
Okay, back to Larry. No, now back to me.
Okay.
Now, a lot of people are looking at Hillary Clinton and thinking, you know, she's going to run. But there are those. I'm sure the governor is one of them and others who think that maybe she won't run. And if she doesn't run, then all hell will break loose. And I guarantee you Andrew will be in there. Now, if I may use the familiar. But I'm also thinking about another guy, and that is the governor of Massachusetts, my governor, Deval Patrick, who is one of the brightest, most fascinating, most adept people that I've ever known, who actually does things because they're right. That is something you don't always see in politicians. And I think he is a natural heir to Barack Obama. He is, of course, African-American, but he is one of the brightest and he is one of the brightest men I have ever met in my entire life and one of the nicest. I think if Hillary doesn't run, there could be quite a little scramble here. He has said repeatedly he doesn't want to run for vice president. He would be a natural, obviously, but he's not ruling out running for president at some point. So,
Alan,
that'd
I have a question.
Be an interesting thing.
Alan, I have a question for you about Deval Patrick. I'm not as familiar with Massachusetts. He's not running for re-election though this year, right? So, if
correct.
Not,
that's correct.
What is he going to do for the next 2 years that people would remember who he was?
Well, first of all, a lot of people will remember. You get into the fight and into the fray, and people hear you. He's a brilliant speaker. And when I asked him, what are you going to do? He said, make some money because, you know, we're about running out.
Speaking of money, I think the lockbox needs to be filled up.
The lockbox does. That's very well played for your first time here, Blair. That's very good.
But Alan's kicking me under the table.
Deval Patrick, though, has he the machine in action? If suddenly Hillary said, I'm not running, and there is the scramble that you predict, does he have the machine ready to go in such short order to jump into the fray, Alan?
I suspect, Raymond, that what he has is the Obama machine. Remember, he was the co-chair of the Obama effort. And he has always really been wonderful to the president, been a terrific second for him. And I suspect that if Hillary decides she doesn't want to run, which is unlikely, but it may happen. And if that happens, then I think the Obama machine goes to the governor of Massachusetts.
Speaking of the presidency, though, Alan, in about a half an hour, the president's meeting with the head of the Department of Veterans Affairs.
10:15.
Erickson Shecky.
That was neat the way you did that.
Ray is kicking me under the table. I'm going to be covered with bruises when this is over. It's unbelievable.
That was
this
neat.
This is why the video doesn't work. Is people don't want to see. You don't want the public to see how you brutalize your guests.
Exactly. So but, yeah, the meeting is happening at 10:15. Now this morning he said that he would have a quote serious conversation. The president said he would have a serious conversation with Veteran Affairs Secretary Eric Shinseki about whether he's the right person to address the veterans care crisis, and now the news broke about half an hour ago that this meeting will take place at 10:15. When the president says he's going to have a serious conversation about whether someone is the right person to address an issue, that would be a fairly large red flag for that person, don't you think, Blair?
Yeah, I think I hear the sound of the guillotine being sharpened, and actually in the setup just before, when they're doing the news piece, they were talking about some of the actual lower level people involved in this were resigning. And so I think Shinseki's going into the meeting with the president, having lopped off a couple of heads. I mean, this is a big issue in the sense that I have different views on it. But one is obviously you don't want your veterans to have to wait for 150 days to get a doctor's appointment. I mean, that's ridiculous. There's no defense for that. The VA has been a problem for a long time. It's also a political problem for the president because the opponents of the president are using this as a way to attack Obamacare again. This is basically big government can't do anything argument. And then the last part, just when I'm thinking about this some more, this is really a problem of them gaming the system. This is the allegation.
What do you mean?
The people that worked in the VA were gaming the data they were entering because instead of 150 days you had to wait, they were saying it was only 20 days that you had to wait. They were lying on these metrics. And corporate America and big entities, government, they rely on people entering metrics. That's how they measure how they're doing. And if you lie about that, you undermine the entire system. So there's a lot of levels of this problem. The VA has always been good in some things, bad in others. This is going to be a huge political problem if the president doesn't deal with it. And it's not one of these issues that just happened yesterday. The problem of the VA goes back a long way. Alan, you probably remember this. When George Bush, W. Bush, was president, there was this whole problem at Walter Reed where veterans were going in there were flies in the room and they had open wounds. I mean, so there's been a problem that predates this president, but he picked Shinseki because he was going to fix it, and that hasn't been done.
Yeah, and, you know, in the end, you know, some of the other things that the Republicans have been hurling at him have really been shrugged off. But this is a tough one because these are the people who fought for the country and because it turns out that there really is a problem. It turns out it's more systematic than we thought. There are too few doctors. I took a friend over there once years ago to the Albany VA who was being told he couldn't have the benefit that he could have if he paid for it somewhere else. It was a drug. He got it. But I have to say, it should never depend on politics or who you know or the rest. I mean, I remember very well saying that my next call was to our Congressman Mike, who was McNulty, who was the on the Veterans Affairs Committee. And boy, did he get it. Yeah. So, it's not a good thing.
Now, and this comes on the heels of the failed rollout of healthcare.gov, right? And so the president really, I think, has to amp the game up that he's going to respond in the same aggressive way as he did on that website.
Now, the critics would say...
So what is it? Yeah. Just really quickly. So what choices does he have? An easy fix is to fire Shinseki. And maybe he figures it goes away. I don't know. I mean, you know, if that's the only thing that'll get the public, eye or foot off of his neck, I think that that's something that you do. But it is interesting that that Boehner, the Republican speaker, says nothing doing. It's not a good idea. Joined by others, other Republicans, as well as joined by Nancy Pelosi. So this could bring back some bad ramifications.
Critics would say that, you know, the president, Obama, that is, campaigned his first time around on this issue, that we need to fix this. It is now halfway through his second term. It didn't happen. My question, and not to belittle the acknowledged 23 deaths nationwide due to delayed care, which is where we're at now, and maybe more than that, dozens more in Arizona. Not to even speak to that issue, which is horrendous, but as a political issue, the president is done. He what political blowback could this have on anybody on the Democratic side who may run in 2 years?
Well, I mean, actually, there's an immediate problem. In 2014, the Senate Democrats that are in marginal Senate, U.S. Senate districts, they're the ones who are going to have to deal with the problem of this as a political issue immediately. If this thing isn't resolved by the fall, in the same way that healthcare.gov was a problem, but after a few months it sort of resolved itself. If it's not resolved by the fall, it's going to be a political problem about the incompetence of the president, the incompetence of the Democrats. Let's get new people in. I think there's a real political problem for Democrats on this issue in the immediate short term. 2016 raises its own issues, but 2014, I think this is where it's political dynamite.
Well, one thing, Tom, our usual correspondent, he writes us a lot. He's got his tongue firmly in his cheek, I believe. And he says, of course, it's Obama's fault that the Republicans cut the VA budget. And I think that goes directly to what you're saying, because that'll become part of the conversation.
No, I mean, look, on something this big, the VA, which is this behemoth entity, 1,700 facilities, 8+ million enrollees. You have very different sort of patient issues where you have aging seniors from the Korean and Vietnam era veterans going there, and now you're going to have this influx of young guys with catastrophic injuries, which they've never seen before. You have lots of different kinds of problems. I think that, and it goes back a long way, but the president is the president. He's been there for almost 6 years. Shinseki was brought in because he was the truth teller from the Iraq war. He was brought in to straighten this thing out, and it hasn't happened. So, you know, generally speaking, you end up the last place baseball team, the manager's the first to go.
And I know this is something that is done in politics all the time, that, for instance, the sins or perceived sins of W were then cast upon anybody running for anything, whether it be Congress or higher office than that. But how logically does one say, well, this is President Obama's failure, if you will, not to fix this in 6 years. How then do you transfer that in the political realm to the next race?
Well, the one thing we don't know is what is the problem, right? Is it just that people were lying about the waiting times and the waiting times are longer and there's really nothing else? You can fix that. You can fix that relatively quickly. You just add people to it, something like healthcare.gov. The governor, the president brings in the top minds in the internet world, and they sort of figure it out. If this is just that problem, you can figure it out and fix it relatively quickly. If this is the tip of the iceberg of some catastrophic failure to take care of veterans, that's not going to be easy. Then you do have a 2016 problem because they'll hang it around the neck of the Democrats, the party, and the candidates for the party.
Alan, I'll give you the final word, then we'll take a short break and shift gears here.
I'm sorry, and I apologize for this, but Blair just said, generally speaking, he used that term, and I'm wondering whether that's General Shinseki.
Okay. All right. Well, let's take a break, Mr. Hopper, and then we'll move our topic to a different one, and then we'll get an update on the lockbox, and then we'll be done with this roundtable panel.
Support for WAMC comes from Bascom Lodge, a historic 1930s arts and crafts lodge atop Mount Greylock State Reservation, offering overnight accommodations, breakfast, lunch, and dinner 7 days, May 31st through October 19th. BascomLodge.net for reservations. Allardyce Ace Building Supplies, providing lumber and building supplies for commercial and home needs with locations in Malta, Saratoga Springs, and Milton, New York. Allardyce.com. Berkshire International Film Festival, now through June 1st. May in the summer, Battered Bastards of Baseball, Trip to Italy, plus 75 films and events, BIFFMA.org. And Adams Ferriker Farms, Poughkeepsie, Kingston, Newburgh, and Wappinger. Fresh daily meats and seafood, Hereford beef, farm fresh produce, local and imported cheeses, specialty groceries, and more, AdamsFarms.com.
Very nice bumper music, Dave Hopper. It is 9:51. It is the roundtable panel. It is a Friday. We're joined by Alan Chartok and NYPERG's Blair Horner. The email address here is roundtable@wamc.org. From the New York Times, House panel advances bill on school lunch options. The House Appropriations Committee on Thursday passed an agriculture budget bill that included nearly $21 billion for child nutrition that would allow schools to opt out of White House nutritional guidelines passed in 2012. It was a 31-18 vote. The Obama administration, hoping to combat rising childhood obesity, announced rules that added more fruits and green vegetables in 2012, and there seems to be some pushback. Blair Horner, you first.
Well, you know, this is about obesity, right? I mean,
Money, too, though, right?
Well, the first things first, though, it's about a third of kids are obese, two-thirds are overweight, two-thirds of adults are in that category, and it's about overeating. And eating lousy food that gets advertised on television and pumped into kids. So it's that, but it's also about, and the schools don't want to have to deal with this issue to some extent.
You have to pay for that as well, though.
Good food costs money. And so if that's what we want, if that's what you want young people to eat, is more fruits, more vegetables, that's what we should be doing. This is about the sugar lobby pushing the House of Representatives to allow schools to opt out of these guidelines that came out 2 years ago.
But, Alan, isn't this also analogous to the unfunded mandates that one would see at the state level where rules come down from on high, but not necessarily the ways to pay for them?
Well, no, that's right. But you made a very good point, Ray, a few moments ago when you said that it's all about money, because now you got agricultural, interests in this. You've got food processors who want to fatten up our kids, even though they know very well that it's leading to a diabetes epidemic in the United States. We've been trying hard here. Look, Michelle Obama and Barack Obama, in terms of leading this, and the folks in the Congress who are doing it, are doing exactly the right thing. And this is one of those disgraceful things that where money starts to trump decent social policy in this country. It's just crazy.
And it's really harmful. I was at the American Cancer Society for the last few years. Next year or the year after, the problems of the cancers caused by obesity and being overweight are going to exceed the cancers caused by smoking in the United States. That it is going to turn out to be. Sorry, Ray. It's going to turn out to be.
What were you saying?
I'm sorry. Alan?
Why were you apologizing?
Because I mentioned, smoking, and he made this a funny face at me.
No, I was reaching for my pack. I wasn't here.
It's a serious health problem, and there are estimates now that this generation of kids will be the first generation in the history of America to not be expected to live as long as their parents. And that is largely driven by lousy food that's being pushed by the sugar lobby. You can call them whatever you want, but that's what it is. Put sugar in everything, put corn syrup in everything, make it taste better. We all want to eat. And the next thing you have is a diabetes and cancer and heart disease crisis. And that's what we're going to face. Unless simple things happen, like forcing kids to eat better food.
What about schools where they say, well, we've done this and we've adhered to this. The kids aren't eating it. We're throwing it away.
Look, there's no evidence.
I can tell you
I'm sorry, Alan.
Well, I'll give you evidence. I was at PS75 many years ago, and they used to give us very healthy things, a sort of a soup that I didn't like, and then a cheese sandwich on very good bread. Okay? Good
delicious.
Meal, right?
Yeah, sure.
It always ended up in my pocket.
Ah.
Well,
So your point is very well taken. You have to make these attractive meals.
That's right. And that's where the rubber starts to hit the road. At the local level with the school districts is they are not willing, in my opinion, to sweat the details about making good food taste good. And that, because that's what it really is. And you can't get kids addicted to sugar at a very young age and not expect them to be addicted to sugar when they get to be adults. And then we pay the fiscal and emotional consequences.
Thank you, gentlemen. Now, we only have a few minutes here, and we have to welcome, we don't really have to welcome Megan Finnegan.
But should.
She walked in, so let's welcome her anyway. She is our membership director, and we have an update on our lockbox.
Well, the lockbox is going great, Ray. We've got $306,625, means we just have $18,000 to go to meet the challenge.
By Monday morning at 6.
By Monday morning at 6.
But 18, that ain't hey.
Hey, we're going to make it.
I don't know. You're very confident. Alan, what do you think?
Well, we have to make it. I mean, it's not – this is not an option. We have to make it. We are so close. We are so close. Whoosh, the giant whooshing sound as the water goes out of the sink. This is close. It's going faster and faster and faster. But will we make it? That's the question.
That is the question. There's the rub. And the web address is WAMC.org. There's a lovely picture of a lockbox there, and you can make your pledge right there. Maybe if you're going to pledge during the fun drive, half now, help us meet our $25,000 challenge, half during the fun drive. And then it's the best of both worlds, right?
And you can spend less on McDonald's for the next few months to help pay for it, just to tie it back into the story.
You're really on a health kick today, aren't you?
Yeah, well, I think it's important.
Well,
it's the health of the station matters as much as the health of the country.
Oh, you're smooth. Blair Horner
is
smooth.
And if I have one thing to say, if I'm allowed to say one more thing before we go.
I
am so delighted with Blair and his participation this morning. You're terrific, Blair. You really are. Wow.
Blair Horner, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you. And don't forget, everybody. $20, $50, you could do it. Put it in the lockbox.
Wow. I got to tell you, we don't even have to be here,
Megan.
I
don't even want to be here anymore.
So what's the most popular name on the mugs?
Well,
you can get a personalized mug, and yesterday it was Sheldon E.
I think Bob might have won out.
Bob won.
But we got an excellent comment this morning from Carolyn, who said, and this is for you, Alan. She said, Alan, for weeks I've been hearing that if I donate, 2 weeks later
we
I would be married.
And she's going to be married.
Wouldn't you know it,
and
I'm donating now,
married.
And in 2 weeks I'm getting married. Thanks a bunch.
A shotgun wedding and a mug. That's perfect.
So it worked.
Yeah, but she... But she also said, could we do something about getting him to help clean up the house?
Oh, yeah. Well, that we can't do. Right. Although maybe we have a separate fund drive for that.
Well, maybe that's next week.
Don't give Alan any ideas because he will do just that. WAMC.org is the web address. You can find archives of audio. You can find news. You can find all events, wonderful things at our website. You can learn about our app. And very important right now and in the next 3 days, you make that pledge into the lockbox.
Hurry.
Hurry, hurry, hurry. Megan Finnegan, thank you. Anything else before you leave?
No, just don't forget, this is the last chance for those personalized mugs.
18,000, and this is it. This
yep,
is a lockbox
exclusive.
Okay, 18,375 to go. Alan Shartok, thank you, sir, and try to get some rest after your gallivanting around at Biff last night.
Oh, yes, it was terrific.
And Blair Horner, well done. Obviously, the accolades are rolling in.
No gallivanting for me.
No, and none for me as well. Thank you, everybody, for being here. This is the Roundtable on WAMC. Two exciting hours dead ahead.